the Arthropod. The Arthropod is the home for the wonderful, weird, wacky world of insects. Hosted by Jonathan Larson, Jody Green, and Michael Scavarla.
Welcome back, everybody, to Arthropod, your entomology podcast. I am one of your hosts for today, Jonathan Larson.
And I'm your other host, Jody Green.
I'm your third host, Michael Scavarla.
And we are very excited to be with you today, bringing you another heaping helping of Arthropod-type entertainment. And we are going to be talking about some creepy crawlies today that we all love and know and work with all the time, the bedbug. That was not a creepy voice. That was more like, I don't know what that was. What's your creepiest voice that you could use on a bed bug?
Bed bug.
I like that. Mike, give me a creepy voice. Mike does not enjoy our reindeer games.
Hard pass.
Hard pass on the Pennsylvania in there. So we're talking about them today because it's the holiday season for a lot of us, and there's going to be a lot of people traveling. There's going to be people on airplanes and buses and cars and trains. I already mentioned trains. I like trains, so I'll mention them twice. And there's going to be people in hotels, and you're going to be visiting relatives. And what I'm describing is all very stressful, but there is an added layer of stress as part of our modern lifestyle, which is going to be possibly dealing with exposure to bed bugs and making sure that you don't end up with them and just kind of having that extra worry as you move around the country. And I think that we get some questions about this every year. Jody has been interviewed on this particular topic.
Many times.
And I think Mike just finished a media interaction on this, right? You got the TV talking. He's on the talking box.
I think it's important to know that bedbugs don't discriminate. So it's not something you can say, well, I'm not going to get that. I'm very clean. That can't happen to me.
And your family could have it and you might not know it. I think people are often ashamed of bed bug problems. There's not a lot of discussion about it. People are often not very honest when it does happen to them. And they may not want to tell you, hey, you probably shouldn't come to my house for Christmas or what have you because I've been dealing with this pest. Because we often look down on people who have bed bugs, which I think is very unfortunate. And I know you feel very similarly. The other thing that we're going to talk about with bed bugs is sort of, I guess, our interaction with them. I think that Jody and I, as extension entomologists, what have we done? The numbers say how many of our calls, one out of every four, is related to bed bugs in some fashion. About 20-22% of our time is spent talking about these. Mike, is it a big part of your job as well?
It's not, and I'm trying to bring up my ID log right now so I can see what the numbers are. But I don't generally see it all that often. So I've got, in the year and a half I've been here, 44 bed bugs. Requests and 8 bat bug requests. So
that's crazy.
That's out of just under 2,000, just over 2,000 total requests. So it's not a large part of what I get. I suspect because most people at the county extension offices know what bed bugs are, they can identify them. So it's often clients that haven't gone through the extension system that are looking for a confirmation that what they've got is bed bugs.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think I looked at some of my numbers and I think 20% are bed bugs / bed bug related. I do have a lot of households and buildings in Lincoln that have bats. And so it's very important to check.
I think I only get maybe 5 or 6 bat bug samples a year. Everything else in that arena is definitely bed bugs though. Just tried and true, regular old Cymex Lectularis coming in and beating on people. So I think that what we're going to do today, we've had an episode way, way back in the dark ages of Arthropod that featured Jennifer Gordon talking about bed bugs. She was a PhD researcher on bed bugs. She works for the Clorox company now. And I think that we're going to update that episode just a little bit here today. We're going to talk about some of the new stuff that's come out about these pesky little diminutive Draculas. And we're going to talk about some of the traveling aspect of it today. But let's start with talking about human interactions with bedbugs. Jody has a pretty cool book. Do you want to tell people about it?
Yeah. So I have The Advances in the Biology and Management of Modern Bedbugs. It's this big, thick textbook that I pre-ordered. And I take it everywhere I go. I mean, I dump out some clothes and I take this book. And so I actually travel to hotels and read it before bed. It's kind of, you know, just concerning to some people that may be with me. But I mean, there's no other time to read about bed bugs than when you're traveling.
When you're traveling. And plus, I'm looking at it. It's pretty hefty. I mean, you could use it to squash a few of them if you did see them, perhaps.
You could. I mean, I've learned a lot. It's pretty much a review of the history of bed bugs and what they're doing now. All different aspects. I highly recommend it for anyone who needs to know more about bed bugs. There are a lot of things online, and I think that's where a lot of our clients get their information and then come to us after. And it's a little bit more difficult to try to straighten things out after things have been read and people panic. But it's also important to know that this is not a new problem. Most people that are coming to us nowadays, they're like, I've never had this problem. So it's important to know that historically, bed bugs have been around for a really, really, really long time.
Millennia. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the first earliest records of bed bugs?
Okay, so there's been remains of bed bugs found like by ancient pharaohs. And so it's like 3,500 years ago. And there are a lot of stories that they were actually used as remedies and medicinal purposes to get rid of other problems and ailments.
Cool.
I can't imagine crushing up bed bugs and using that as a medicine.
Right.
Because they stink. They smell so bad. So they're in the same type of order as stink bugs, right? So they're a true bug. So they've got the piercing, sucking mouth part, except they don't, they use that, you know, to feed on blood. So people were trying to get rid of them back then, but to get rid of other ailments like snake bites or lethargy, they would use crushed up bed bugs as medicine.
To get rid of lethargy? Bed bugs?
Like, yeah, urinary infections, all different types of things. So they used that.
I don't even want to know how that would be applied.
So we talk about a lot of like Rome and Greece, and it's been referred to in many instances. And I mean, when it comes to humans and bed bugs, I think some parents still use the phrase, you know, good night, sleep tight, don't let the bed bugs bite. I will never use that phrase in my house. But, you know, it's something that people have talked about, but they don't really exactly know that these things are real and that they've been, you know, wreaking havoc for people.
Right. I think
for centuries.
There's a lot of people who they've sort of slipped into this realm of mythology based just on that nursery rhyme and on forgetting that they used to be around here. But this is real. Like Pliny the Elder has written, he wrote about bedbugs in some of his writings. So this is something humans dealt with for an extremely long time. And it's only in the last 40 years, 50 years that we really had this lull and being exposed to them in certain nations, thanks to DDT, basically.
Yeah, and I can talk a little bit about that, too. The one quote that I do like from history was by a botanist and physician, Pietro Andrea Mattioli, in 1557. He said, "Among all the night enemies which often perturb our sweet, quiet sleep, there's none more cruel than bedbugs."
There's none more cruel.
And so, yeah, and I agree.
Maybe right? That could be the title of the episode.
I agree with a lot of things. Maybe you can. The cruelty of bed bugs. So the thing that I thought was interesting are a lot of the different names that are used throughout time and history for bed bugs. And so in ancient Rome, Simex means bug. And then Linnaeus also, you know, for couch or bed is Lectularis. And then Greek chorus means to bite. And that's how they named coriander, which is why they say that when that coriander is the seeds of cilantro's leaves for horticulturists. But that smell, they say when you squish a bed bug, smells like coriander. So I guess coriander must smell really bad. But they said in Chinese, chuchong meant stinky bug. In medieval France, punaise meant to stink. Japanese, they have a new name because they had a derogatory name, kind of like German cockroach or American roach, blaming China. So now it's, I think, what do they call it? Tokojirami, it means bed louse. In German, Venerchen means little venereal. In England, they just called them bugs. Spanish?
Chichas.
Yeah. And then other names in Europe and North America, bed louse, wall louse, wallpaper flounder, Night Rider, red coat, mahogany flat. And the one I like the best is the crimson rambler.
That is a good one.
Yeah. So it's been around for a long time, and it was thought to have spread back in the day because we started heating our homes and our palaces, and with fires, and we're really warm when we sleep, and bugs need that. So
we're also nice and squishy, easy to bite, full of blood. Mm-hmm. I think that it's also interesting to think not just about this historical aspect in terms of our human interactions with them, but maybe even their genetic lineage. It's interesting to me to think about, where did bedbugs come from? That's a question that I get sometimes when I go out to speak to the public, is how did this happen? Is this proof of a vengeful lord or something to that effect?
Who brought them here?
Yeah, who brought them here? Why do they exist? And I think maybe Mike could speak to a little bit about that genetic advent of bedbugs in history.
Take it away, Mike.
Talk about it, bedbug evolution. Let me tell you. So I honestly didn't know a whole lot about it before boning up on bedbug evolution for this podcast, and it's really interesting. So bedbugs are in it's the family Cimicidae. There's about 100 species of Cimicids worldwide. Besides the two species that are well known for feeding on people, Cimex lacularius, the one that we have here for the most part, and Cimex hemipterus, the tropical bedbug, which is in more tropical areas. The rest of the species feed on a variety of birds and bats. And so you're actually really unlikely to encounter most of the other bedbug species, except for perhaps swallow bugs and bat bugs. At least I think it's interesting. Bedbugs, we've got fossils from them in amber, at least stem Cimicids, that are around 100 million years old. And using DNA techniques and molecular dating, it's thought that the bedbug lineage split off from related lineages between 115 and 122 million years ago. And that's really interesting because all of the most basal bedbugs now feed on bats. Bats arose about 60 million years ago. So you've got this lag where the most ancient of the bedbug groups were feeding on things that weren't bats. Probably early birds in the late Cretaceous, maybe dinosaurs.
What?
Right? maybe mammals, because mammals were becoming more diverse at the end of the Cretaceous. And then you've got the KT extinction. Dinosaurs and large swaths of birds are wiped out. And so then all of these early derived groups of bedbugs, all of them, there's four lineages, all switch on to bats independently. And then they diversify on bats, and then jump back to birds, and two species from there jump onto people. So Cimex hemipterus, the tropical bedbug, probably native to Africa and arose there. So we've probably been dealing with that species for millions of years, as long as humans have been humans. And then Cimex lacularius, the species that we have in the United States and in more temperate areas of Europe and similar places. I couldn't find good information where it arose, but there's some thought that perhaps in the Middle East somewhere, as humans moved out of Africa, we encountered it on bats in caves, and then it jumped onto us from there. Looking at Cimicoidea, so the larger superfamily that includes bedbugs, there's some interesting things going on with that, because all of the families that are related to bedbugs, so Anthochorids, the pirate bugs, you probably have heard of those. They're predators often in agricultural fields. They're predators. They're not parasitic. But some of them will bite people and other mammals. So things like Aureus, the minute pirate bug, they'll mistakenly bite people and feed on us, particularly in the fall. And then there's another group, the Lictocoridae, and same thing. They're predators in leaf litter, but some species are found often in ground nesting bird nests and mammal nests, where they will facultatively feed on the birds or mammals in those nests. So it looks like we've got a collection of families closely related to bedbugs that most of the time are predators. Some species will live in nests in and around birds and mammals, and from there probably one group of them decided, hey, this blood feeding gig is really good. Let's just do that. And evolved into bed bugs from there.
Very interesting. And it sounds like there was maybe an association between us and bats when we were a cave-dwelling species ourselves.
Sure. I mean, think about it. We're still getting bat bugs in our houses from bats. Imagine that over evolutionary time, you've got just these bed bugs that are on bats falling on us because we live in caves, and they decide, hey, these people taste just as good or better than the bats. Let's stick with them.
Oh, man, I would totally pick person over bat. Bat guano, smelly. Bats, hairy. The bat noise, terrible. Humans, like, we have cool houses that are warm. Yeah, every day, all day, people over bats, totally. But they must really like Batman because, you know, both things are there. So that's sort of where they come from, why they feed on us, how they got associated with us. I guess the other big question that I often hear is, why are they biting us? Like, why do they need our blood? What is it that they're getting from us, Jody?
Life.
Blood is vita, is life, right?
They need it.
Yeah, they need it in order to grow, is my understanding, right? Like, they can't go from one life stage to the next without a blood meal. They have to take it to molt.
Right, and so, excuse me, so, like, in mosquitoes, it's only the female that requires the blood meal. She, you know, mosquitoes feed on nectar, but she needs the extra protein for eggling. In bed bugs, every life stage needs it, male and female. The female needs it to lay eggs, so, I mean, they need it for life. It's their necessity.
They are like vampires.
They kind of are.
Yeah.
They require blood. They don't feed it. There's literally nothing else that they feed on. So they bite us because we're their food.
And so when they're biting us, what are some things that might happen to people after this bite occurs, Mike? Like, what might happen to your skin?
Oftentimes nothing.
It's true.
There's a lot of people that don't react to bed bug bites. There's a small percent. And I don't have exact figures. I'm not sure anybody does. There's a small percent of people that will react and get like a red bark or a red wheal on the first bite. And then a larger percentage of people will develop that sensitivity after exposure to bed bug bites for weeks, maybe even months. So if you've had an infestation that you didn't know about and you're being bit every night, eventually you could become sensitized to those bites and start showing reactions the next morning.
And I think there were a couple of researchers that had fed bed bugs, to sustain life for their project, and over time did develop almost like a really, I don't know if it was life-threatening, but like medical reaction, and had to had to be hospitalized. So it can occur over time. I know I'm very sensitive to bed bugs. I'm like your prime client since I've had West Nile, and I have been bit by bed bug at a hotel. So, and I know that my husband is not a reactor at all. And typically we see this quite often when clients come in and they're a couple or a family, and one person is exhibiting like an allergic reaction to the bites, and they're either itchy, they've got the welts, and others are like, nope, you crazy.
Yeah.
I don't see any, I'm not getting bit. She's got the bed bugs. I don't.
You had a client that came in and he was just annoyed by bed bugs, right? He didn't know they were biting him. He just thought he had a lot of bugs in his house.
He brought in a Tropicana container with 78 bed bugs and asked me what they were. And I asked him, like, well, where did you find these? He said, in my bed, like on my body last night. I said, do you not react? He did not think that they were bed bugs and that they were even biting him. So yeah, we get some clients that are just annoyed by them. So they become nuisance pests and they're unaware that these very well-fed bed bugs are living in or around their bed. And so that's another thing. People are like, well, do they live on us? So they're not like head lice or
scabies. They don't live inside us or anything. Right. Yeah, they have to live somewhere else, but they need us for the food resource.
They feed on us, but they live off the body usually. Right.
So what we're saying is sort of you get a red itchy welt on your body. In some cases, you may not react. In some cases, you don't react for some time. I remember you saying your first exposure, you didn't have the welt for 7 days.
Yeah, it was exactly a week. And then later on, well, nowadays, I react right away. And I don't think they even have to feed, get suck blood from me.
Oh, you get
probed. It's just as soon as they probe me, I will welt up.
Wow.
Entomologists usually know how they will react because we're weird like that and we want to know. To me, I feel like I'm the sentinel of the family. I'm it's not a bad thing. It's actually, to me, I'm grateful that I'm a reactor.
So this sounds bad. Like I get bad welts. I get itchy. I don't enjoy that feeling. So do we consider this a public health pest in the same way that we would consider mosquitoes a public health pest?
It depends who you ask.
Yeah.
Like I feel it's a public health pest, but when it comes to the vectors of disease. At this time, there aren't any diseases that have been shown to be spread from the bugs to humans. There's always ongoing research about that right now, and so that may be updated in the future, but not right now.
Are there any diseases that we would be more worried about than others?
I think from research, it's like Chagas.
That's the one that we're keeping an eye on.
Yeah, and those are, right now, we... You know anything about Chagas disease, Mike?
What research has been done with it, bed bugs aren't good vectors for it. It's vectored just by kissing bugs. So I think we should say that here that, future research, yes, could show that bed bugs can vector things, diseases, but there's been a lot of work done and all of it has shown that they don't. So while there's a chance that that could change, I would put a lot of money on it not. Bed bugs almost certainly aren't vectors. So just for peace of mind for the people listening, we should say that, yes, let's hedge our bets, but they're
not. Right. Let's talk about why they're not good vectors then. What is it that bed bugs lack that some really classic disease vectors have?
Well, they don't fly.
They don't, oh, yeah?
So they can't really move around a lot. If the same bed bug population is feeding on you and your family, that's not really something that's going to spread. But when it comes to being a vector, it's pretty difficult because you've got to acquire that pathogen on your own and then replicate it in your body and then be able to actually transport it to a host. And so even though we've got so many of these, ticks and mosquitoes that are very important public health issues, bed bugs just don't have that. And so they've been shown to harbor many pathogens, but as for acquiring it on their own and then passing it on, spreading it, they haven't been.
So it's totally cool if you have bed bugs, right? Nothing bad ever happens if there's no diseases?
Oh, no, man. There are so many negative impacts of bed bugs that, we see in our profession.
Right.
And just, getting bit by bed bugs and worrying about bringing them home and social stigmas.
Let's talk about that a little bit. What are some of the social stigmas attached?
People don't want to go out. They don't want to have family over. They feel isolated. They feel like they've done something wrong. And even if they did something to do that, it's not the end of the world. A lot of times it's very depressing. It can be a lot of, there's a lot of psychological issues involved. I've been there. Thinking that something is biting you while you're sleeping is a huge violation. Biting your family, biting your babies, children, those kind of things. It's kind of traumatic. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I would totally agree that it's a traumatic experience. I think that there is some evidence that people who have had bed bugs often end up with some of the markers of PTSD type symptoms. So it is a traumatic experience to go through. I think that I've dealt with multiple people that have ECBOMs or delusory parasitosis, whichever you would prefer to call it, that they actually started with bed bugs, got rid of them, but they just can't get over the feeling. They can't get over that violation that their bed space was taken over by something that was stealing blood from them, and they've got to process it. So there's definitely a big problem there. Yeah. I think that I've also dealt with a lot of, I don't know how else to put it, but racism with bed bugs. I feel like there's a lot of people who have preconceived notions.
Blaming other.
And they'll blame a lot of other people for bed bugs that this didn't happen until X family moved into my building, and what kind of people they are. Sort of attitude, I think, also leads to this cone of silence around bed bugs, where people will suffer for a long time without seeking help because they think it's going to denigrate their character in some fashion. Has this ever reached the shores of your office, Mike? Like you said, that the county extension folks are probably intercepting a lot of this, but have you heard some of these things from people as well?
Not on the racism side of it, but I'm not surprised by that either. I just haven't encountered it myself.
Yeah.
I think because a lot of these do get turned around, but there are, I've had a couple clients that, and one that comes to mind in particular that, well, I guess a couple that come to mind, that especially with older clients, you tell them the things that they need to do, like you need to pick up, and declutter everything so that when you do get a pesticide treatment from a company or whatever, a heat treatment, whatever you decide to go with, that it's more effective because you reduce the harborages where the bed bugs are hiding and you need to vacuum every day to try to sweep up as many as you can. They're too old to do it on their own. They might be too poor to hire somebody to come in and help, and they don't want to tell their family because of all the reasons that we've mentioned. You know, they don't want the stigma attached to that, so they don't want their family to know. So they don't deal with it or can't deal with it because they don't have the resources, and the stigma attached to it is preventing them from reaching out to get those resources.
I think that that's an interesting point to bring up too, is as we move into a period in American history, since we are in America, where we have this more top heavy age population, where we're going to see a lot of people aging up. I think that this is going to become a very significant problem. I think that we're going to see a lot of nursing home incidents. I think we're going to stop worrying about hotels as much, start worrying more about nursing home centers and hospice care and hospitals. I think that this is going to explode. I think we're going to see a lot of people who can't do the things they need to do to protect or help themselves. And I was kind of wondering what your thoughts were on that as well.
I think I already see it. I think I've written a couple articles about bed bugs in the aging community. I think when it comes to inspections, if anyone feels like they're getting bit or sees signs of evidence, is when they start doing inspections. Some of the senior population, they can't see as well, so they are not seeing the signs. They also have a different type of immune system where they are probably less likely to react. And from, I think it was Dr. Potter's study, like 40% of senior citizens were not reactive to bed bug bites. And so that's also going to be a symptom that's going to be missed. So if they can't see them, they can't feel them, and they're not reacting, that just lets populations get out of hand. And as Mike mentioned, like, they can't lift beds, they can't do those inspections to look further. A lot of them have a fixed income, so they're not able to afford someone to come to help treat or clean up. And so, you know, we always try to teach, like, that bed bugs don't discriminate. It really has nothing to do with race or money or anything like that, who can get them. But in the grand scheme of things, the people that have less resources and people that are poor and living in overcrowded places that can't afford to clean or can't afford to get the help they need are going to be more susceptible to infestations that won't go away. So, yeah, I definitely see that as a problem and something that we want to educate about prior to. But unfortunately, with bed bugs, it's something that people don't want to pay attention to it unless they have a problem, which is pretty much kind of too late, right?
Yeah, and I think that that's been our experience. I know that we go out and do a lot of programming, hundreds of talks between us over the course of a year. And we had an experience where we went out to try and do some teaching on preventative bed bug practices. And we were at the state fair here in Nebraska and on the world, or on the state's largest stage, as they put it. And we were given an hour to present on bed bugs, and we brought all this equipment, and we were going to show people how to do an inspection, and zero people stopped by. They were at the fair to have fun, I think is how you usually put it.
Eat some deep fried butter.
They want to eat deep fried butter and see the world's largest cow or what have you. They don't want to hear about something creepy and crawly, gross, maybe something that scares them, maybe something that they're dealing with and they don't want to be reminded of it. They're trying to get away from that. So we had zero people come to our hour-long talk. We adapted and came up with the Bed Bug Roadshow kind of on the fly and just started a booth where we were shouting at people about bed bugs and bringing them in and getting them to pay attention to the things that we had to say. But it's definitely, it's an uphill educational battle to try and get people to want to learn about this and to do things about it. So on that note, we frame this as... Sorry. Go ahead.
Just one last idea with the senior citizens before we move on past this. Beyond just the bites and the annoyance of it, if the infestations get bad enough because the people just can't deal with it, I mean, you start running into other medical issues, up to and including things like anemia because there's so much blood loss.
Right.
I've tertiarily a colleague of ours encountered a case like this via a medical doctor where a senior just couldn't deal with the situation and it got out of control to the point where during the day when it's bright out, there were hundreds of bed bugs on the walls because there was nowhere else to hide for them. And the person in the house didn't deal with the situation and was experiencing extreme anemia to the point that it required hospitalization.
Wow.
So when you let it, when it does get that bad, there are, and that's an extreme example. It almost never gets that bad, but
right.
It can, and there are other medical issues associated with it.
Right. There's secondary infections and all kinds of problems that we can associate with it. So it's unfortunate, I think, when people argue it's not a public health hazard, because I think it very, very obviously is.
Right. And in multi-unit housing, a lot of times you don't have control of that. And I mean, they don't have wings and they don't jump or fly or anything like that, but they do crawl. They crawl considerably fast, right. And they can move. Like when people are like, can they go through walls? Yes, they actually can.
Right.
So, you know, wall voids and any crack or crevice that's going to be close by. And yeah, they do stay close to the hose, close to the bed or on the bed. Even in things like wheelchairs and prosthetics and car seats, things that we don't want to think about and that we rarely treat. But when the population gets really big, they have to move away from that area. And that's when they start, you know, going to find other food sources.
When they become communicable almost.
Right. Yeah. And
so what can we do about this? What can we teach people today? We're talking about this holiday travel season, planes, trains, and automobiles. Are there things that people need to be aware of as they travel? I feel like whenever we do some of this bed bug education, we put all this info out about like, and, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. And then at the end of that, sometimes people, they're so shell-shocked, they just don't want to ever leave their house again because they think that bed bugs are around every corner waiting for them. So is it powerful to have this knowledge to just be aware that they're out there? But then what do you do with it after that, do you think?
Like preventative? Go ahead, Mike.
There's two ways to get at it. One, preventing them. How do you prevent them from coming into your house to begin with? And then two, if you've got them, what do you do then? So we could start on the prevention because that's you know.
That's IPM.
Start. That's IPM. And you mentioned it's travel season and people are out and about. They're staying in hotels. And that would be my guess for the majority of people pick them up is hotels. Unless you've seen something different.
I don't know if I have that kind of numbers on hand, but I would guess that just, it kind of makes sense, right? There's a bed, there's mm-hmm. people going in and out, but it's not the only place. I feel like people often just focus on hotels, and hotels are being very proactive about the situation as well.
They are, but I mean, we can definitely pick them up anywhere we go.
Right.
College kids are coming home, and yeah. So, you know, a college dorm or a house with, you know, a bunch of people. That go different places that have boyfriends, girlfriends, airports, movie theater. I mean, books from the library. There are so many places you can get them. So you can't really, I guess, narrow it down that way to prevent against one or the other. But I think coming into your home is where that line of defense is. So, you know, when you're bringing things in, whether it's used furniture or used books or, you know, someone handed down something to you or you're bringing home, your college kids, you know, luggage, like go through it outside in the garage, look through it, put things through the dryer that can be dried. Often we get asked like, do you wash and dry? I mean, if you're going to wash and dry, okay. But if you're just going to put it in a hamper, dry it first, high heat, 20 to 30 minutes will kill all life stages. Check that lint trap. You'll never know what you're going to find. Sometimes right. You will find bed bugs and you didn't know it.
I'd like to explore this one line of thinking that you kind of mentioned, because I feel like Mike is talking about you're going into the hotel. It's probably a best practice to do an inspection before you stay the night at the hotel. But you're also talking about you can control more of the process in your own home. So you would advise that maybe that's where you draw the line in the sand. Like you're proactive out in the field, but at your house, that's where you really do some things.
Yeah, I mean, well, we do travel quite a bit for different professional meetings. I do an inspection and I'm kind of funny that way about what my routine at a hotel. But since being bitten at a hotel that I thoroughly inspected and actually had changed rooms, if I were to use the energy again, you know, I would focus on not bringing them home, right? Like, we can't help what's out there. We can't stop traveling. We can't stop what's out there in the world, but we can control what we bring in. And I mean, I think early detection is going to be the best way to control it or to manage it, because the threshold for a bed bug is pretty much like none, please. Right.
Right. The control, your control plan, your action threshold is one for bed bugs. Usually.
Yes.
So, okay, let's talk about both these things. Mike, if you were checking into a room and you were going to do an inspection just to make sure, give yourself some peace of mind, what are some of your first steps when you walk in?
First step is put your luggage up high. Put it up on a table or perhaps a wooden chair. Don't put it on the floor or on the bed. Because if there's bed bugs on the bed, there's a higher chance that they'll get into your luggage and you'll bring them home if the bag's there as well, or if it's on the floor next to the bed. If you can, flip the mattress up so you can see underneath it, kind of ruffle the sheets around, look under there. Look for bed bugs, but also look for signs of bed bugs. So their poop. It looks like small red or brownish tarry spots on the often white sheets. If you can move the headboard, because some hotels just glue the headboard straight to the wall. If you can move that, look behind it. If you can move pictures, again, if they're not secured to the wall, look behind those. Look in the drawers of the like bedstand or the stands next to the bed, see if there's anything in there. And if it's just one person in a two-bed room, sleep in the bed furthest away from the bathroom. There's some evidence that there are more bed bugs in the bed closer to the bathroom because of the higher relative humidity. I think I've heard that. So, you know, if you can lessen your chances even that little bit by sleeping in the further away bed, do that. So those are the things that I do. I don't know if you have anything to add to it.
Some good preventative strategies there. Now, Jody, when you're coming home, when you get back from the holiday, you've arrived at home, you're ready to just divest yourself of all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Is it time to do a little more work just to be proactive? Or do you just set all your stuff down on the floor?
No, I don't even bring it in the house. We still have suitcases probably in the garage. And I mean, I think it's really important to just I do not take anything out of my suitcase and put it back in the drawers. That's for sure. Whether I wore it or not, that needs to go through the dryer. And the luggage stays outside. It gets wiped down. It gets vacuumed and lint rolled if possible.
So wipe it down. What do you wipe it down with?
I usually wipe it with a Clorox wipe.
Okay.
And I also I don't even bring our bags into the bedroom or anywhere that someone sleeps. I do have like a drop zone or a mud room where everything goes. We're not, backpacks from school, sporting things, all that stuff stays there. If we're going to take it to like our office or something, that it can go there, but it can't go where anyone sleeps. And that's not because I don't think bed bugs will ever be there, but it increases the space between where you may be bringing them in and where someone's sleeping. So they can find us through, carbon dioxide. So they're going to go toward human. So in that space, if we increase it, so it's, you know, that someone will step on it, see it, probably freak out earlier instead of wait to get bitten. And then also I run the vacuum every day after a trip just in case something falls off. You want to pick those up right away outside of the bedroom. If you take your luggage and put it right under your bed, you know, essentially you're just like, here, there was your last home.
Right.
You're digesting. When you're hungry again, just come on out and feed. So it's to increase that space. And so we've got a luggage rack or shelf down in the basement that we can put our luggage on. But your home dryer and your vacuum, definitely the non-chemical preventative tool sanitation. Yeah.
So you're saying keep it far away from you, wipe it down, inspect it, vacuum it. And if you can, run things through a dryer on high heat for 20 to 30 minutes to kill any bed bugs that may be caught up in it.
Right. And one thing I would add to Mike's is that when I go to a hotel, I have a lot of bags. And so dirty laundry doesn't get put on a pile on the floor because that's when bed bugs can crawl into it. I just put it back in a dirty laundry bag and put it back in the suitcase so so that it's all bagged up and ready to be thrown in the dryer when I get home.
Well, I feel like we've given some people some good tips here today. Just one more stressful thing to think about while you're on your holiday vacation. Just think about, you know, all the calories I'm eating, the gifts I have to haul around, and now think a little bit about bed bugs as well. It's just proactive. This isn't to make you feel fearful. It's just to help you feel like you have weapons in your arsenal, knowledge in your arsenal that you can use against these particular pests so that you can protect yourself. I think we talked about a lot of cool stuff as well with the evolution and everything. So I hope you enjoyed that. We are excited to be bringing you another episode of Arthropod next month. The topic will be unveiled. We are going to have lots of cool resources in the show notes. So I hope that you will go to arthro-pod.blogspot.com and you can see things like that Mike Potter study that we mentioned that looks at the effects on elderly people. We're going to have some articles that feature our very own Jody Green as an interviewee. Maybe we'll find the video of Mike being interviewed by the Pittsburgh media as well. I think that we're going to put up some of our infographics about bed bugs in that space as well. We have things about their biology, also some basic control options and things of that nature.
Like if you're going to go to any of the resources online, which we know there are a lot, they'll be like scientific based from universities where they do study bed bugs, and the EPA website has some good stuff. They have a clearinghouse of resources. So those are the places you want to go to get the information. So we'll have those available for you.
Absolutely. Those will be all there. If you want to reach out to us on Twitter, you can reach the show at @arthro_pod_show. I am at @JLarson_UNL.
I am at @JodyBugsMeUNL.
And we would love to hear your comments, questions, concerns, complaints, ideas for new episodes. We're always looking for that kind of stuff online. And we thank you for listening to another episode of Arthropod, and we'll see you here soon.
It's time for our insect heroes to put away their nets and pheromone traps. Join us next time, same bug time, same bug channel, as the Arthropod gang make the world safe from poor insect podcasts. Until then,
keep on bugging.
That and oh, did you see that I got bat ticks for the first time?